The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. Using science to debunk myths, from the pandemic to climate fraud. Thanks for listening to Sky Dragon Slaying on TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Sky Dragon Slaying. We're so happy to have with us Dr. Stephanie Seneff, MIT researcher, and somebody who's done a lot of work on exposing health issues, you know, the conspiracy we see in the food industry, big pharma, to make us all sick, make us long-term sufferers. You know, so we got treatments that fill the coffers of the banks of the corrupt big pharma and politicians as well. But let's not forget them, administrators. What we want to do is make the point that sudden death is something that's become perhaps the biggest killer of the over 65s, sudden death syndrome. Also young people. The epidemic of sudden deaths is something that Dr. Peter McCullough has been reporting on, and we reported on that, and Dr. Joseph McCullough too. Cause of sudden death. Sudden death is something that myocarditis is the issue. It's nobody's talking about it. It's reported in the media, Stephanie. You see it reported. Nobody wants to talk about the real cause. The elephant in the room is, as we know, these experimental mRNA vaccines. As you say, they're not vaccines. It's gene therapy. How far do we go down this road before people wake up and really take action? Can you see a point now where it's going to get to that, where people will, you know, demand politicians be held accountable?
I hope so. I think that it's amazing to me, with all that I see on Twitter and whatnot, all these people like Dr. Marcus who are posting all these, you know, events where people, young people, are just dropping dead, found asleep, you know, come to their bedroom and they're dead in the morning. And Peter McCullough has been all over that as well. And he and I have been collaborating on a number of papers on the spike protein and the toxicity of it, and how the vaccines are more toxic than the disease and the mechanism by which. And I've become, again, very, very fascinated with trying to understand how that might be happening. And it becomes very clear to me when I look at the vaccine adverse event reporting system. I've been all over it, looking at different symptoms, you know, different things that people are experiencing with the vaccines, and looking at the percentage of people, the percentage of the cases that are associated with COVID vaccines compared to other vaccines. And I've done a really thorough investigation of the year 2021, COVID vaccines versus everything else, and the percentage. And it's just shocking that you have 98%, 99%, you know, of the cases of some specific symptom are linked to COVID vaccines, and 1 or 2% are linked to all the other vaccines put together. It's like way out of line with anything else you've ever seen. And things like sudden death are showing up there. Of course, myocarditis, that's so clear. And the you know, the amount of myocarditis associated to the vaccine is much higher. Now, the disease can also cause myocarditis, but at a much lower level. And studies have shown that. And so I'm fascinated by that. And of course, I always want to understand the science behind it. And I think I have an answer that might be explain what's going on. And it's quite interesting to me, this hypothesis that I have, which involves how the vaccine migrates, how the vaccine contents ends up in the nervous system, and in particular in the brain centers that control things like the heartbeat. So you get arrhythmias and you can get sudden death from that. But there's and of course, then it can also migrate to the heart as well. So both the control centers monitoring, you know, controlling the blood pressure and the consciousness. You can go into a coma if they aren't working properly. Those control centers in the brain are getting, I think, contaminated with the spike protein. And the spike protein is known to be neurotoxic. It's a prion-like protein. It causes misfolding. It causes inflammation. Really bad stuff. And what I think is happening is that the muscle cells, so you get the injection into the muscle. The muscle cells take up the RNA. They start making spike protein like there's no tomorrow. They've got tons of it and they don't know what to do with it. So they release it into the exosomes. And normally there's a communication channel between the muscles and the axon of the neuron, the motor neuron that's in the spinal cord. And that motor neuron, you know, is signaling to get the muscles to contract. That motor neuron at the synapse, the exosomes are released into the synapse and taken up by the motor neuron. That's something that goes on all the time. And in fact, the muscle is delivering signaling molecules, it's delivering nutrients, lots of things through exosomes. And those exosomes are actively transported down the axon all the way to the backbone with active molecular motors, are pushing it down and delivering it to that to the soma of that cell that's in the spinal cord. And then that cell can actually do the same thing again and send it up to the brain. So you're ending up with spike protein contaminating the entire, all that nervous pathway, hiding inside exosomes, actually displayed on the surface of exosomes, and even spike mRNA inside the exosomes being protected by the exosome, getting delivered to the brain centers. All of this is happening behind the barriers. You know, they talk about getting past the blood-brain barrier. You don't have to get past it. It's already been injected past all the barriers, the mucosal barriers, the vascular barrier. It's in the muscle. That's in the tissues. And you can just ship it along nerve fiber pathways, along those axons up to the brain center. And you see inflammation of the vagus nerve, inflammation of the all these nerves in the head, the facial nerve, the trigeminal nerve, the auditory nerve. You get, you know, tinnitus, all these symptoms that you see in the VAERS database. So many of them are linked to inflammations of the nerves. You know, there's a neuropathy. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of symptoms that are connected to inflammation of the nerves. And so what I think is happening is that these exosomes are carrying they're almost like a clone of the vaccine, only they're more powerful because they have other things in there, like microRNAs that can control policy, that can cause inflammation to occur. This has all been shown in studies that I've collected. It's really quite an amazing story. So I think if you are very muscular, really strong arm muscles, you're in worse shape with respect to the vaccine. And that's why we're seeing really, really strong men, you know, getting taken down by these vaccines. You have like the wrestling champion of the world. I mean, this kind of thing I've been noticing, or people who play basketball. I mean, all these people are going to have strong arm muscles. I think they're more susceptible to damage. Young men with strong arm muscles have a much better communication channel via exosomes to deliver that toxic load to the spinal cord, and then ultimately to the brain, and then onto the vagus nerve. And just all these nerves are being inflamed. You have the Bell's palsy, which is the facial nerve, and the tinnitus. There's lots and lots of tinnitus, which is the auditory nerve, you know, loss of a sense of smell, which is the olfactory nerve. All those nerves are getting attacked by the spike protein through the back door, you know, never got into the circulation, just went.
So this is the spike protein from the vaccines or from the COVID-19?
From the vaccines. Yeah, the vaccines have a much better path because they're injected into the muscle. The virus comes in through the nose, comes into the, has to get past the mucosal barrier, has to get past the vascular barrier. The vaccine's already passed those barriers from the get-go. And then the exosomes are ready to go. They just ship it on down to those nerve fibers, and everybody gets really, really toxic.
Another thing I think we should consider is also the peak flow test, lateral flow test, nasally applied, where, again, you've got that thin membrane at the top of the nasal passage. That it gets you through the blood-brain barrier, doesn't it? Again, these tests were not in the least effective as diagnostic tests at all, are they? They're really, from what we know from Professor Kerry Mullis, the idea of the test was just to be an amplification technique, not for diagnostic tests at all.
Right. I mean, I've heard that the amplification was so huge that it wasn't really accurate anymore with the number of cycles that they used.
Over 35, I think, was a common suggestion. Anything over 35 cycles was pretty much meaningless, like taking a photocopy of a photocopy. Once you do more than 30, you pretty much, it's just noise.
Looking at noise. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe Olson, you said you got Dr. Peter McCullough at the event again. You're going back to that in a short while?
Yeah, but I'm going to go ahead and stay probably for the rest of the program. One of the other guys that was there is a guy named Dr. Tom Reed. I had met him and Stella Emanuel and Dr. Robin Armstrong, who was on Trump's medical team at an event in Conroe, August of 2020. And Stella gave me a script for I've been taking it every 2 weeks ever since then. But he's got a book called Your Health Has Been Hijacked. This was published in 2019. And he's a double certified medical and surgical specialist. But he puts his money where his mouth is. Him and his wife own an organic blueberry farm with 7,300 organically managed plants, and you can go out and pick your own blueberries. So he's doing his part to not only help you health-wise, but he's helping you diet-wise. And one of the other things I wanted to mention was FAA doubled the amount of space required for your EKG back in November of last year. A woman that was just appointed by Biden went in and they were having so many pilots that were having problems with their EKGs that they raised the EKG limit. And I'm looking through my notes. I'm trying to find it. It seems like it's an S0.2 node, but I'll keep looking for the notes to give you more accurate information on that. But bottom line is, if the pilots are showing conditions where previously they would have been grounded for heart attacks, they're now just waving them off going, oh, no, you will wait till you have a heart attack. So
otherwise, they wouldn't have enough pilots.
Yeah. Another captured agency.
I think it's true that the recent meeting of COP27, or whichever it was, the meeting of the global warmists, the alarmists in North Africa, that they insisted on the pilots not having any vaccinations at all. You know, it's like it's one rule for them and another rule for us. And it's pretty bit concerning. Another thing I want to talk about, if it's okay with you, is the upside of it. What do we do? I mean, we're aware. You know, you're pointing the problem out very clearly, and we know that GMOs are a problem. We know that Roundup, glyphosates, these are things that we will have to consider. A diet is so important, that the natural biome, what we put in our gut is so important. And the other thing that I really, really latched on to, Stephanie, is what you had to say about ultraviolet light and vitamin D. Joe Possmer, you and I were fascinated by that, weren't we, this week?
Yeah, I really loved that. And I really wanted to ask her about that. First of all, I really loved the results that you've reported about the vitamin D supplements being basically useless compared to getting actual vitamin D from the sun. I mean, of course. I mean, like you said in your articles, you know, life has evolved under the sun. All life is here due to the sun. Of course, there's probably so many subtle energetic influences and responses, chemical responses, and other responses, even electromagnetic, that we probably don't even know about. So, of course, we respond properly to the sun and differently to the sun. But I wonder, do you think that extends to many other supplements? Do you think of this whole supplement industry, of these pills we take? And you take these pills, and then half an hour later, when you're urinating, you urinate a different color, and you can see it coming out. Is that just useless?
I think so. I am actually a big fan of no supplements. I consider supplements to be extremely processed foods. You know, when you think about a soy protein bar, very processed. A supplement is a pure molecule, just one molecule. You know, you're taking a tryptophan supplement, so that's just pure tryptophan. It just seems ridiculous to me. You want to eat the foods that contain that supplement rather than
get it from
taking
the food,
that supplement.
Right?
I think it's true for all of them. And, you know, it's interesting with vitamin D, because you see studies that show they look at the vitamin D levels in for people like with COVID, you know, and the ones that have really low vitamin D in their blood have really bad outcomes with COVID. They see the strong correlation. And then their reaction is, oh, well, take a vitamin D pill, you know. But then when you do the placebo-controlled study with the vitamin D pill, it doesn't work. So they're so puzzled by that. And what they don't realize is that the level of vitamin D in your blood is an indicator of how much sun you've gotten, if you got your vitamin D from the sun. But if you didn't, it doesn't have those other aspects of what makes the sun so valuable to you.
Yeah, and then the other side,
besides the vitamin D.
Exactly. And then the other side of that is that they want us to not be in the sun, because
they
the sun is
sick.
Dangerous and that the sun is unhealthy for you, right? And
yes,
you know, and
of course
we do spend so much time indoors. Nowadays, we you know, with the office jobs and whatnot, we're hardly ever in the sun anymore, are we? We really need to get back out there, don't we?
It's crazy that they're telling you stay out of the sun, stay out of the sun, when you know, actually our lifestyle is such that we're already in the sun much, much less than we're supposed to be. You know, even just 100 years ago, people were out in the sun much more than they are today, just with their natural lifestyle. And then they say on top of that, you know, stay out of the sun, wear the long sleeve shirt, wear the sunscreen. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, and I think a great point.
Sorry, I just want to add, I got to promote this article that you wrote, Stephanie. Sunlight and vitamin D, they're not the same thing. And that's on the Foundation for Alternative and Integrative Medicine. I love that. I mean, I learned something from that. I've been doing it wrong during the pandemic. I was, like most people, supplementing like crazy, taking extra vitamin D and zinc. And there you are saying, get out in the sun and do it naturally. And the idea that it's ultra processed, that really, it's like a eureka moment for me. I'm thinking,
yeah, that was a great comment.
Yeah, such a great comment. We are I'm sure that the people in authority know what they're doing. I'm sure they know that when they tell us to keep out of the sun and, you know, avoid these things, then they can't, it's kind of an evil way of denying us a natural connection with nature. And we talked about grounding before, didn't we, Joe? The idea of grounding, you go out in nature, putting your foot on the grass, and the electrical circuitry, that's another thing that you picked up on really well. The idea that we're electrically based, you know, organism. We've got to be in tune with nature. And this is something we've over-processed our lives to the extent now that it's self-defeating, isn't it, the way we live our lives.
It is. And, you know, it's curious to me that I know a lot of people who don't eat processed foods, so they would never have a soy protein bar, but yet they're taking all kinds of supplements and they don't see the irony of that, you know?
Yep. And I think that most people realize that there's no shortcut to good health, is there? You've got to put the hard work in. You've got to make the effort, and it's time dependent, isn't it? You've got to make the time to prepare food. It's no good. I mean, the other thing that most people make the mistake of doing is going out to restaurants, eating restaurant food. And that's probably the worst thing you can eat anyway, with the processed oils as well, isn't it? The
fast yes, food, that's right. You processed have no control oils. Over. And yep. almost never I mean, organic, you know?
Yep. So what you do, and I love what you were telling Dr. Tom Cohen, is that every night you have a really hot bath with some salts. And you're a great believer in that, aren't you?
I am. Yes, I think that that's great because that's magnesium sulfate, which is both the magnesium and the sulfate are really important for health. And they just absorb through the skin. And so you're supplying your body with these nutrients in a relatively natural way because you have, whenever I get a chance to be somewhere where they have sulfur hot springs, then I want to go soak in those because that's a natural form of what I'm trying to simulate with a bath, you know?
I want to talk more about that in a moment. This is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan.
I knew I was very angry, and because I was a soldier, we took things seriously. We took them, you know, truth, honor, integrity. You know, these things meant something. People died for truth, and to see that the world, or at least the world we lived in 2013, was very different to was completely the opposite to that. Sent me around the twist as well, and particularly in that when I tried to do something about it. I just meant brick wall after brick wall. Like a rat in a maze, when I'm writing my book at the moment, and I'm, but don't worry about taking 5 years to write yours, I'm like 4 years and counting.
But I think that's good though, David. I think that's good. The worst thing would be if you push something out in a year, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's going to be a stream of consciousness. You need time.
When I finally stopped trying to over-egg the pudding and say what happened without any embellishment, it's pretty good. I suddenly realized to myself, wow, this is a, you know, chronological, saying what happened, and that's where it gets its power. It's surprisingly powerful.
McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. The conversation continues.
Our public education system, which I am now renaming our public miseducation system.
On today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hi, welcome back to Sky Dragon Slaying. We're often told that being healthy is an expensive business. It's probably not really that expensive at all, because if you look at it carefully, what we could probably spend on treatments, so-called big pharma treatments and supplements, you know, that I've spent a lot of money on supplements. But really, there's a cheaper way, and that's just eating better quality food, being more discerning. And one thing you're doing, Dr. Seneff, is having Epsom bath salts. That's such a simple thing to do. And again, it goes back to what you were saying about sulfates, a lack of sulfates in our body. We need to add more. And the hot bath, explain to us the importance of a hot bath with Epsom salts.
Yeah, the hot part is interesting because infrared heat has been shown to grow the exclusion zone water in the vasculature by a factor of 4. This is Gerald Pollack's work. I'm really fascinated with structured water. We mentioned that at the beginning of the show, I think. with the cholesterol sulfate. Sulfate makes the gelled water, and sulfate lines all of the blood vessels. It's stuck to the glycocalyx, and the glycocalyx has these glycosaminoglycans. I call them GAGs, G-A-G-S, that are made up of heparin sulfate. And the sulfate is, there's various places where you can stick sulfate onto that heparin sulfate molecule. It's a big fat molecule, sort of a whole bunch of sugars in there and some nitrogen, complicated molecule, but it has sulfates, places where sulfate can go, and only some of them are occupied. And if you are sulfate deficiency, fewer of them are occupied, which means you have a lower negative charge, which is the thing that the sulfate makes the water gelled. The gelled water pushes out the protons. It creates a battery that provides energy. And when you get infrared heat, which is also, of course, available from the sun, it causes a great expansion of that gelled water, which essentially charges the battery. It charges the battery. So you're basically a solar panel, your body, from the sunlight or from the heat, from the infrared heat.
Joe Posma, you had a point to make about UV?
Yeah, sure. Related to that, to the sun, I did see this recent article that I believe you wrote, Stephanie, about the connection between the increasing prevalence of skin cancer in the last few decades and what the cause of, you know, of course, we're being told that this is from being caused by the sun, but it's actually being caused by, it seems, by wearing sunscreen of all things.
Right.
So, yeah, I would like to ask, get you to comment on that, but I wonder if you could tie in the possibility that there's increased UV from the sun, because when I was doing my undergrad work at the end of the 90s, I did work with a professor who studied the sun extensively, and he was actually showing, and he actually showed it for climate change purposes in class one day, but it might connect to this skin cancer issue too. Anyway, he had showed that there was an increase in UV emissions from the sun over the last few decades as well. So do you think that's a connection?
I don't know. I haven't studied that and I wasn't aware of it. And it seems kind of surprising to me that that would occur, but it's possible. It's even possible that somehow we've done something to the atmosphere such that the UV doesn't get filtered out properly, you know? And again, I'm fascinated that there is such a thing as cloud bacteria. I don't know if you realize that, cloud bacteria. And I imagine they're like the soil bacteria and the gut bacteria, like they're probably really important in the sky. And I have wondered about actually glyphosate poisoning the cloud bacteria as a way to disrupt the weather patterns, which I think is an absolutely wacko idea. But, you know, I always like to think of out of the box.
No, that's great. Well, why don't you tell us about the connection between sunscreen and skin cancer then?
Yeah, well, sunscreen has toxic chemicals in it, especially it has aluminum. And aluminum is extremely toxic and it can go through the skin. And actually, I talk a lot about ENOS, endothelial nitric oxide synthase. I've written a lot about that. That's an interesting enzyme that makes nitric oxide. But I believe that it's actually a dual purpose enzyme. It makes both nitric oxide and sulfur dioxide. And depending upon the circumstances, it switches between the two. And I believe that it's a key player in making sulfate in reaction to the sun. So the ENOS actually responds to infrared light, blue light, and UV light. It needs all three to work properly. It's sensitive to light. And so if you're not getting enough sunlight, it's not producing as much sulfate. So you're getting sulfate deficiency. And and the nitric oxide also gets released. The ENOS is able to, the cell is able to monitor the situation with the blood. The endothelial cell lining the blood vessel is actually watching, and it can detect how well the blood is flowing through signals, electromagnetic signals from the red blood cells. It's really fascinating. There's work on this. There's an vascular endothelial potential. I forgot exactly. There's a four-letter mnemonic for a potential, electromagnetic potential in the blood that is based on how much sulfate there is in the cells on their surface. So the red blood cells actually have cholesterol sulfate and also heparin sulfate on their surface. And that's giving them the negative charge, keeping them from sticking together. They're like magnets that repel each other, the red blood cells, because they're all negatively charged. And if they aren't negatively charged, they get in trouble and your blood starts to coagulate and you get blood clots and things like that. So the platelets as well, I mean, all these suspended particles, so to speak, in the blood depend upon negative charge in their membrane to keep them separated from each other and to keep the blood flowing. So that negative charge is actually emitting a signal. It's a moving charged object moving in flow with the blood. And it comes past the endothelial cell, and that endothelial cell can actually hear that message. And so it knows that if it receives a high signal of a healthy red blood cell, high negative charge, rapid mobility, things are good, it can release nitric oxide, which will help to facilitate the circulation. So there's a whole feedback mechanism between the endothelial cell and the moving blood that they can monitor the situation, and then they can release either sulfate or nitrate to control the fluidity of the blood. If it gets too thick, they want to get some nitrate going. If it's too thin, they want to get some sulfate going. They want to control the flow of the blood through these molecules that behave opposite ways. The nitrate is what's called a chaotrope, and the sulfate is what's called a cosmotrope, and they have different opposite effects on the colloidal system of the blood to either make it more viscous or less viscous. It's really fascinating.
So and I think grounding helps with all this, doesn't it too?
Yes, like with grounding the viscosity does. Of the blood. That's right.
Yeah, and that means negative just to charge. Explain to the listeners. Yeah, that means barefoot on the grass, basically, doesn't it?
It soaks up the negative charge from the earth. It's a giant negatively charged ball. So whenever you have good contact with the earth, you're going to get electrons coming into your body, and that's going to increase your negative charge, which is good, which is what you need to keep the blood healthy. That's a theta potential, is it?
Where's the best way to ground? What's the best way to
I would say walking along the shore of the ocean in the water. Yeah. The water gives you really good grounding.
Yeah. Did you say something about the water getting more access to sulfates through the seawater?
Yeah, the seawater has sulfur in it, so you can absorb it. Yeah. That's just sort of like taking a sulfur bath, right?
Exactly, yeah.
You can soak it up. And other things, too. I mean, the seawater is really healthy to just hang out in the seawater if you've got access to it.
Mm. What about fresh water?
I think fresh water is good, too, but maybe not as good. You know,
sure, great.
Seawater great. Is like, it has all the right amounts of minerals and things. It's pretty amazing stuff, really.
And it's free, isn't it? It's cheap. It's not going to make a lot of money for Big Pharma.
Yeah, the sun is something. If they could figure out how to charge for the sun, they'd probably start telling us all to get out in the sun, right?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, a lot of the things that you talk about, again, tie in very, very well with other experts we've had on the show, in nutritionists and so forth, who've come and explained to us that a lot of the things we need for better health are very, very affordable and very simple mm-hmm. to do. And you've advocated yourself... you've explained the fact that for those of us who live in northern latitudes, I mean, I live in the UK, we don't get a lot of sun. We've been having a very wet summer at the moment. And you made the point that we stock up with vitamin D, with the mm-hmm. old UV light. And because it's likely that we do it through the summer to mm-hmm. store it through the winter, the fact that we've got it as a winter supply. And you've said that... Yeah, and you've said to supplement that, we need to eat more fatty fish like salmon and cod mm-hmm. liver oil. And you made a good example with the Eskimos, but the fact that living in very extreme northern latitudes, they do very well. They're very healthy, and they eat a lot of seal blubber, an excellent sort of vitamin D and cholesterol sulfate.
That's right, yes. Thank you for that. I have said that. That's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a great article.
Actually, surprising to people who were studying them, were really surprised that they were so healthy because they thought their diet was terrible. You know, they weren't getting fresh fruits and vegetables, which we think are so important. They were eating so much fat, which we think is bad, you know, and they were doing great. It was like, what is wrong with this model?
It
turns out I was misremembering. It's not EKG, it's ECG. It's the electrocardiograph. And it's the PR interval. It's measured milliseconds and extends between wave. And that's the one that ends up giving you the myocarditis. And they raised the level from 120 to 200 milliseconds is what the woman Northrop, who's the one that's in charge of the FAA, unilaterally. No, she had no advice and she had no published research that said it was safe to do that. But that had been the threshold for installing a pacemaker.
Yeah, wow. That's interesting. It's crazy how that's what they do with glyphosate too. Monsanto will tell them, oh geez, you know, we're getting higher levels of glyphosate showing up in the food than what your limit allows. You need to raise the limit. And they say, oh, okay. They multiply it by a factor of 10, you know? Just, okay, raise the limit because we're getting more. We don't want to become, they want to protect themselves from, you know, being in trouble. So they just ask the government to raise a limit, and they do that.
Yeah, you made a good point, and you were looking at that, your article again, going back to the vitamin D sunlight thing. You referred to a study involving women over 70 years old who had at least one self-reported risk factor for hip fracture, low body weight, previous fractures, et cetera, et cetera. And to reduce the risk of vitaminosis, D, women took calcium supplements and they were excluded. And it's ironic, really, because the study pretty much showed that the more supplements they took, mm-hmm. the worse the outcome.
Right.
It kind of was counterintuitive. You'd think that the more supplements you take, the better. But it turned out to be the opposite. Shocking,
really,
isn't it?
It's crazy, isn't it? It's really interesting. People have been very frustrated, I think, because they see how much healthier people are when they naturally have high vitamin D in their blood. And then they think, well, this is an easy thing. Just give them some vitamin D supplements and we'll fix the problem. And when they try to do a placebo-controlled study, it doesn't work. It doesn't do the same effect. And they're puzzled. They don't understand why. Because the vitamin D is really a symbol of the fact that you've been exposed to the sun. It's not just the vitamin D that's keeping you healthy. It's everything else that's happening along with it when you get the sunlight exposure.
Stephanie, I think you had mentioned too that there was a connection between your vitamin D level and your pineal gland health.
Yes. I always advocate vitamin D to the eyes. And of course, you see little two-year-olds wearing sunglasses, and it makes me cringe when I see that. The parents are being so careful to make sure their son doesn't, you know, suffer from sunlight exposure to the eyes. And that's really, really bad to do, because those kids really need that sunlight to the pineal gland for their proper development.
Yeah, I bring that up because René Descartes, the philosopher, identified that he thought somehow that the pineal gland was the seat of the soul. That was how the soul interfaced with the body. Well, what's your spiritual inclination? You know, if we want to get to know you a little bit, what do you think of that idea?
Well, I like that. In fact, I know monks tend to, you know, have this thing about staring at the sunlight at dawn or at sunset. You know, they stare at the rising sun, which has a different distribution. It's much safer. You don't want to look at the sun, obviously, normally, but when it's low in the sky, apparently it has sort of natural mixture of appropriate amounts of the UV and the infrared and all of that to be safe and to be very spiritually rewarding for these monks. And I find that interesting. This kind of ritual of staring at the early morning sun.
Yeah, it goes across many cultures. And what I'd like to point out is I picked up on this, I looked into it when I read your article. And the fact is, I remember that Russians have Russian mothers had a tradition of putting out their babies, in the sun, in the daylight. And Nordic families as well, they would put their children, newborn mm-hmm. babies, out in the open air. A great belief that it's so much more healthy to be outside. It's something that would be a complete contradiction to our Western way of thinking.
Absolutely. In fact, I was frustrated when my first granddaughter was born, and her mother, my daughter-in-law, was explaining to me that she had the child in the stroller, and she was being very, very careful to make sure that she was always in the shade, you know, adjusting the stroller top to make sure she was always in the shade. And I sort of commented about that. She said, oh, yeah, the doctor says, her pediatrician, you really want to make sure she doesn't get exposed to sunlight. You know, she has shade always. And of course, she's too young now. But when she's 6 months old, we can start using sunscreen, and then she'll be able to be out in the sun. I mean, I was just so shocked, you know.
Yeah. And the other
sunscreen
thing you pointed
is 6 months.
Yeah, it's...
Get up in the morning. Tell your kids, get up in the morning, put on your sunscreen, go to school, you know.
I mean, as if that's like, what needed, like in the history of life on Earth.
I know. You know, it's so
as if this is what's needed. You need to slather yourself in a lotion before going outside, just like all the animals and plants do.
I know. It's so weird to me that people buy into this stuff. And of course, that the doctors are advocating it and even sometimes insisting, and they feel so confident that they're right about it. And, you know, melanoma skin cancer has been going up exactly in step with the increase in we've been using more and more sunscreen every year. And the cancer is getting more and more common. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, you made the point. You referred to a study published in 2009 that analyzed almost 300 million person years of data over a 10-year period and concluded that the rate of skin melanoma had increased by 3.1% per year. But the other thing it found out is that the more sunscreen you use, the worse the outcome for melanoma.
And that's what's
again,
so
counterintuitive.
Weird.
Yeah.
It's causing the melanoma, you know, because it's toxic. And it's disrupting your natural ability. I mean, the thing is, you've got, you know, melanin in your skin. And when you get sunlight exposure, the melanin protects you and you get tanned, and then you're safe against the sun from the tan. But you never let yourself get tanned because you're always wearing sunscreen or putting on long sleeve shirts. You know, you stay white. Now, if you happen to be in a situation on a boat where you don't have your sunscreen handy in the middle of the summer, you're in trouble because you don't have the natural protection you would have had if you had gotten that tan. When in the early, you know, in the spring, when the sun's not quite so harsh, you just build up a tan for the summer.
Yeah.
Basically, as a man, we need to be in short shorts and shirtless, don't we? Beginning in early spring.
I know. And that's another thing, of course, is that we can't get full body sun exposure because of our inhibitions, you know.
Yeah.
Even men aren't really allowed to walk around without shirts anymore. I remember when I was a child, you know, men used to be out washing their car with the shirt off, no problem. Seems like even the men have become kind of, you know, more careful about exposing themselves. Today's world, everything's unnatural.
Well, we're here to expose the truth. This is TNT Radio.
Former President Barack Obama reveals that his daughters have bought climate change hook, line, and sinker and are in climate despair.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Here is what President Obama had to say.
Malia comes to me. She says, you know what? She's 24. All our friends, sometimes we talk about climate change and we just feel like there is no way we're gonna be able to solve this. And so I'll be honest with you, Dad, a lot of my friends, they just feel as if, what's the point? Because the world's burning and there's nothing I can do.
Yes, that's right. Obama's daughters reveal, what's the point? The world's burning. It's hopeless. President Obama weakly suggested that his daughters work to keep the Earth in the 2-degree temperature goal of the United Nations, which is a nonsense target. The real answer is education. President Obama needs to expose his daughters to people like Nobel Prize-winning physicist Dr. John Clauser, who warned in the same week that climate science has, quote, metastasized into a massive shock jock journalistic pseudoscience. Maybe if Obama's daughters and their friends heard that message, they wouldn't be in climate despair. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Morticians are reporting that vaccine deaths show thick, fibrous clots that don't easily degrade. Stop the jab and save lives. The COVID vaccine does not work. On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hi, welcome back to Sky Dragon Slang. We're covering a lot of ground scientifically with Dr. Stephanie Seneff. At the moment, we're doing a deep dive into the benefits of sunlight and vitamin D. The article that me and Joe Posma really got our teeth into is titled Sunlight and Vitamin D, They're Not the Same Thing, by Dr. Stephanie Seneff. I'm reading the version from the Foundation for Alternative and Integrative Medicine. That's www.fiam.org. It's a very interesting site. But let's give a shout out to your website. You've got your own site. Give us a little summarize your work on your website, where you've got publications and so forth.
Yes, I just have I have a link to my book, Toxic Legacy. I'm giving you several links to publishers that can, where you can get, find my book. Then I have another section where I post some of my interviews with various people like you. And then I have another section where I have slide presentations. I've given a lot of slide presentations over the years on all these different topics. And I guess I have a page where I write articles, but I have been a little slow on that because I'm really busy with other things. So that's I have several articles up on another branch. So it's got some material there. It can give you a sense of me, certainly, if you go there and poke around.
Yeah, the URL is stephanieseneff.net, and it's a really useful resource. And what I like is the fact that you cover so many subjects. You're so diverse, and we're passionate about people who are cross-disciplinary, because we don't like the idea that science is becoming a profession of over-specialization. And people are experts in knowing, you know, more and more about less and less, if you like. They're not able to have an intelligent discussion about the scientific method. And like you arguing, like the point I made earlier about the fact that you were going to hopefully be an expert witness in a lawsuit, it seems like lay people don't seem to appreciate that scientific method has it covered. If you understand the basic concepts of maths, physics, and the true scientific method, you pretty much can do a deep dive in any scientific discipline and weed out the inconsistencies. Again, it's how real science is done, isn't it? By being skeptical and challenging new ideas, rather than trying to protect them and avoid controversy, which is the opposite of how much government science is done nowadays.
I know. I feel very frustrated with the situation with the medical community at this point. The doctors, of course, are afraid to move away from the protocol that's exactly prescribed from the up above. Pharma controls their every move. If they prescribe against this protocol, they can get sued, right? So they just stay right straitjacketed into that model that pharma has set up for them. I think it's ridiculous. And that you have a lot of naturopaths who are being very creative in exploring different ways to treat. And of course, a lot of these people who are trying to treat COVID-19 and playing around with things like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, zinc, and all those things, and getting some good results, but they're getting their license removed if they step out of line, you know? So it's just really straitjacketed. And then the science as well. The scientists don't seem to be willing to accept exploratory hypotheses. That's what frustrates me, because you can have an idea about something and you can put that out there with a paper that just supports it with the literature that exists. And you can admit that the studies haven't been done yet, they need to be done, but you have to first have that idea before anybody will think to do the study. And I can give a good example there, because I've become very interested in deuterium lately. That's been a passion of mine for the last couple of years. And I didn't know anything about deuterium until December 2019, when I happened to get contacted by Laszlo Boros. He's a professor in Hungary. He was trained in Hungary, and he believes deuterium toxicity is a major part of our health problems, and it relates to mitochondrial problems. So you get mitochondrial dysfunction as a consequence of too much deuterium in the mitochondria. And deuterium is heavy hydrogen. It's a hydrogen atom with an extra neutron, so it's twice as heavy as hydrogen. It's a natural element. It's all over the place. And our bodies have learned how to manipulate deuterium so that I think it's getting concentrated in the gelled water, and it's becoming depleted in the mitochondria, because the mitochondrial AGPase pumps get really in trouble when they get hit with a deuterium atom instead of a proton. Really fascinating science. And I think it relates a lot to the problems that we see. So many of our diseases are associated with mitochondrial disorder, so many diseases. Mm-hmm. And mitochondrial disorder can be a result of too much deuterium in the mitochondria. So it's really fascinating stuff. And of course, it also caught my eye because I can see that glyphosate disrupts many of the critical enzymes that are involved in maintaining low deuterium in the mitochondria.
Yeah, another point to add to that is the deuterium is also very low in animals that are grass-fed. So again, the fact mm-hmm. that we're
food from grass-fed
farming
is lower.
Yeah, yeah.
And so fats again, have low deuterium.
Yeah, yeah. Everything's joined up, isn't it? Yeah. It seems to be a connection here between industrial high-intensity farming and mm-hmm. poor outcomes. You know, the
right, exactly. And that's one of the reasons is this excess deuterium in the foods.
Yeah.
That's really interesting, John, about the grass-fed. You know, I'm actually at my sister's ranch right now, a 10,000-acre ranch where they raise cattle, and he's just spent the last 5 years going full regenerative and organic, and they finally got that certification this year. They're beef are completely grass-fed and grass-finished.
Yeah.
So I'm going to enjoy some beef right after our show today, some good grass-fed beef, and I'll be happy that it has less deuterium in it. I'll make sure to tell them that. And
yes.
Stephanie, you mentioned about there seems to be a problem with scientists not looking into alternative explanations. Oh my gosh, Joe Olson and John O'Sullivan, we can tell you all about that, can't we? That's how the Slayers got started, and Principia Scientific International got started on the climate issue. And you know, mm-hmm. I really tried to take that as far as I could. I tried to write papers and I tried to simplify it down as much as I could. You know, and really to the point of just saying, look, you really what you are doing, it really does reduce to flat earth theory. Here's the math. Here's the diagrams you use. You even use diagrams in your textbooks with flat lines for the whole earth. And I'm just trying to show you that the math doesn't work out the same when you have a round earth. I mean, it's geometrically different. And I get these peer review responses from them in peer review. And they say, no, there's nothing wrong with flat earth theory whatsoever. There's nothing wrong. And then I say, you know, a consequence of the mathematical consequence of doing flat earth theory is that the sun doesn't heat the earth. That's just how it works out in the math, because you're starting off with the wrong math. And so you get this wrong result that the sun doesn't create the climate. I mean, don't you think that's wrong? They're like, no, that's right. That's what the prevailing literature says. And it's our position that the sun does not create the climate. And yet leaves you wondering, what is wrong with scientists? Why don't they look into any alternative explanations when they're just so simple and so obvious and so intuitive? What's wrong with them?
I know. I mean, I have a lot of trouble with this whole business of biofuels as a way to answer to the problem of oil, you know, consuming oil, switching over to biofuels, which are coming from the crops. You know, you harvest the crop and then you take the rubble and you put it on a barge, you take it down to a city and you put it into a plant where they process it and spit out, you know, things like ethanol, right? Ethanol going into the gasoline, 10%, or biodiesel fuel, or the bio, gas that cooks the on the stove, on the gas stove. They can get all those out of that rubble, and that whole process involves growing a lot of food. You know, part of it is wasting a lot of plants that could produce food and making, for example, corn, making ethanol out of the corn instead of making food. You're decreasing the production of food. But worse than that to me is that you're using glyphosate on these foods. And the glyphosate, I think, is getting into those biofuels, such as the ethanol. And then the glyphosate is getting out into the air. And then it's poisoning us. We're breathing glyphosate in the cities where we're burning a lot of these biofuels. I think we're getting glyphosate contamination in the air. And I think that's impacting COVID-19.
Yeah, I just did a quick search on Twitter for your, you did a post on the biofuel thing, and I've just literally started following you now. It's something, again, I never considered before, biodiesel. It's, again, a problem. Again, it's experimentation, a new way of doing things, and all these unintended consequences come together.
Do the computation, it doesn't actually solve anything with climate change. It actually costs, it's worse than just using the original oil, the natural
oil.
Totally
agree on that. Yeah. We found the same thing with so-called renewable energy. We found that wind farms and solar panels, they're not productive at all. In fact, they are, you know, net users. They're worse than so-called fossil fuels, and it's something that we have been working very hard to expose. And EVs, electric vehicles, again, a very inefficient way.
Right, electricity—that's the whole thing now, right? Everyone needs to use electric. And when you do the math to figure out exactly how you got that electricity, it's not at all effective. It's actually less efficient, right?
Totally, yeah. Yeah.
Ethanol has 80,000 BTUs per gallon. It takes 100,000 BTUs per gallon of planting, irrigating, harvesting, and distilling to be able to produce it. You add it to 100 BTU per gallon gasoline to reduce your gas mileage by 15% and ruin your engine. Biodiesel is mainly from soybeans, and it is double the cost of diesel. So you're taking diesel to go out and grow soybeans in order to produce a fuel that is a net, all of them are net energy losers. Every one of the sustainables is unsustainable.
I'm glad you said that, because that's what I've been seeing as well. And I'm glad to see your support on that idea. It's frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing talking to you. We realize we've got such a lot of things in common. We don't agree on everything. We don't expect to agree on everything, but we're looking for common ground to form alliances, and that's what we aim to do. Your projects, you said you're working with Dr. Peter McCullough on a new paper?
Oh, we are. It's a real doozer, though. It's it's been a challenge. We've been working on it for quite a while, and it's on the immune system, and especially on the TREGs. These are the regulatory T cells, and their role in the reaction to the vaccine, and then their role under different circumstances, young, old, you know, cancer patients versus not. I mean, all these different conditions in which the response is different, and then the role of those regulatory T cells. And it's been a real challenge for me. I've been reading papers like there's no tomorrow. I've been reading so many papers on the immune system, and the more I read, the more complex it appears to me. And we're kind of having a lot of trouble wrapping it up. I mean, we have a lot of material and it's interesting, but putting it into a coherent paper is really, really hard. So we're fussing with it. It's a challenge. But I've had a wonderful time working with him. We have these, you know, Greg Nye and I wrote that first paper you mentioned, and he's been my friend for a long time. And we've done a lot of papers together before. But then he and I teamed up with Peter McCullough, and also a Greek, a really smart Greek guy, Anthony Kyriakopoulos. And the four of us have been writing papers on the vaccine, several papers now. And this one we're working on now is just a real challenge. It's like the hardest thing I've ever done. So I'm having, it's been very interesting because I want to learn about the immune system. It's so, you can't imagine how complicated it is. It's like the most important quote unquote organ in the body, I think. And the other cells will sacrifice themselves to keep the immune system strong. You know, it's really interesting.
I like the way
it's complicated.
Yeah, I like the way that you reduce it to sort of an engineering analysis. You know, I get the sense when I read your work. Obviously, you know, you are a very experienced engineer, and the body really does have a lot of systems which are quite machine-like and quite understandable, aren't they? It's not so. I mean, it is a mystery. Obviously, it is a hard problem, but you know, we really can understand it, though, can't we?
No, I mean, the immune system is incredibly complicated. And you start putting your toe in the water, and then you read a couple of papers, and then you realize you're further behind than you were before, because now you know.
Oh, is that right?
You don't know. You're aware that you don't know these things. And all the terminology, all these different kinds of cells. I sort of had this, you know, picture that there were CD4 plus and CD8 plus T cells, you know, and then there's B cells, and then there's monocytes. I mean, all those different names, macrophages of the different cells in the immune system. But it's not just that. Like even each of those cell types has many different variants of them. They have all these different things they express or don't express, and that turns them into something different. I mean, it's just incredibly complicated.
So it really is.
Work through the weeds. Really, I just can't come up with a storyline that makes sense, you know?
That's such a good point. So it really is a very complex system then, isn't it? Yeah,
it's really hard.
Yeah, on the issue of creating publications, could you speak to the problem of peer review journals and the gatekeeping process? Did you get much problem with that?
That's really terrible. I mean, people like me who have made it known that I disagree with so much in the mainstream and the pharma feels I'm a threat. The journals are well bought, and they will bounce your paper without review, you know, just because they don't want to go there. They won't even send it off for review. That happens a lot. We all realize that it's extremely hard for us to find a so-called reputable journal that will publish our papers. And luckily, there's a lot of just like the alternative media, there's a whole alternative journal space that's popping up like dandelions. And they're having more trouble trying to control these open access journals that, you know, they don't have the prestige and therefore they don't get the limelight. You know, mainstream will ignore them, but you still have a following. And in fact, Greg and I published that first paper in one of those journals, IJPTR, International Journal of vaccine something rather, IJVPTR, a lovely journal that publishes all this, you know, counter narrative stuff, but has no clout, so the mainstream's going to ignore it, you know. But we got actually a lot of reads because there's because of people like you, they can spread the word, you know.
Yeah, it's exactly that. I mean, the reason we teamed up with TNT Radio is at Principia Scientific, we found 13 years ago that as a body of unconnected independent researchers and scientists, we were also suffering from being blocked. You know, the idea that censorship is so endemic now. What they do in the mainstream media, they do the same in science publishing. And again, if you're not part of the clique, you don't get published. So we started 13 years ago, myself, Joe Posmer, and Joe Olson, and we started with about 20 of us, and now we've got like 7,000 international members. It's something that has to be done now, and we have to do what we're doing, but like with TNT Radio, going on shows, independent shows, and I feel the alternative media is beginning to get a foothold. Mm-hmm. I like the fact Twitter's coming back. I mean, some people have said Elon Musk may be a wolf in sheep's clothing, maybe not a white hat or a black hat, perhaps a gray hat. You know, these are issues that, you know, will resolve themselves over time. But the important thing is, I feel that we are having an impact. We're getting traction. And your work is very, very impressive. And it's such an entertaining conversation. I can't believe we've just had a 2-hour conversation with you. It's just flown by. Dr. Stephanie Zenith, it's been such a pleasure having you on the show. And I'm just blown away with your work. You cover so much ground, so diverse. You know, it's a real joy to be speaking with you, and hopefully we'll have you again on Sky Dragon Slaying. Dr. Stephanie Seneff, thank you for joining us on TNT Radio.
My pleasure. It was a lot of fun. Thanks.
Thank you.